Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Ernest, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors. And it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
So let's even talk about student debt for a second.
Right.
Let's talk
right.
about how much it costs to go to school, right?
Like, right. Right. Because that's an issue in itself that needs to be rectified, right? Because generations are still going to school. Like, you know, I'm graduating classes year after year who still are aspiring to take on this amount of money for an education that should be free. And to be honest, it doesn't equate to the cost. Like, the value of the experience is not adding up to the cost. But to your point,
that's a whole nother that's a whole nother interview, Greg. But that's absolutely on point, right? Like, us thinking about whose fault this is and how we got here, the blame has always been put on borrowers.
Right.
Our country is built on debt.
Yes.
Everybody's gonna be in debt. They gotta owe somebody else who owes money. And this narrative that it's the borrower's fault, that it's the person's fault for wanting to pursue a higher education, that is a, it is a political argument, because, you know, parties and politics are a part of who divides that discussion. But it's really a question about our value on education just to begin with.
We have absolutely.
So if you don't value education, then of course you're going to blame people who go, right?
Right.
If you value education and you think education should be a right, then you're going to figure out all the ways in which this government, when they create their policies, when they pass their policies and legislation, make education accessible for everybody. So to your point and to this discussion, I try to avoid arguments. I like to work with the coalition of the willing, right? Like, everybody got an issue they want to fight for.
That's nice. I'm going to borrow that, the coalition of the willing. Amen.
Listen, everybody got a problem, okay? Everybody got a problem with something. And I've been doing this work for 12 years. And so there's some times where I will engage in conversations to convince people. But then there are some folks who are just built to understand that you should pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that it's the borrower's fault, that education is only shouldn't only be accessible to people who can afford it or who deserve to go. And I just don't subscribe to those notions. Everybody deserves to go to school. I don't give I don't care about the cuss. I don't care if you just do 2 years and change your mind.
Right.
Go
right.
to school. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because some people are like, oh no, you wasted money. No. I don't think the education will ever be a waste. So just go.
Yeah.
And when we talk about cancellation, it is the reframing of our mind and conversations around whose fault it actually is. The government has increased our tuition 130%. And if you look at most schools across the country that are public institutions that get federal funding, that money is not going back to the students.
No,
that money is going to hire executive principals and executive officers and to pay for new buildings and to buy new cars and to do all these things. It's not going to the workers. It's not going to the students. UCLA right now is trying to expand its campus so they can recruit students to get more income. But students are living in the lounges in the dormitories.
It's just crazy.
Not owing the cost of tuition. I teach at UC Santa Cruz, and my students during the pandemic paid the full cost of tuition, paid for housing and food, and didn't get the services because they were at home and did not get a refund. What they did get was 3 COVID masks and a box of COVID tests.
Lord. I mean, you talk about injustice. I mean, that's just, it's insane to know the way it's insane to know to understand the system and how it's been working. And it's not only just in that just institution of education, but you kind of see these same themes in all the other institutions, right? But it hits closer to home when it's education, because it is the access to information that we need to make progress in our community. And so what communities like our community has done is be able to tap into the masses of people who actually just want to have an experience with information, right? Engage with information, learn, cultivate community around the information. And what schools have gotten away from, to be honest with you, is actually building building community and building cultivating kind of learner, you know, this learning experience because of the concerns that just that are kind of ancillary around the issue of education. Like, so if I've got to weigh the cost of education and against the quality or the need for education, then come on, we all know the choice that we're putting up against. And then it's a no-win battle. Like, who wants to take on $100,000 of debt to go through 4 years of school? And so for young people who are still developing and still growing and looking to have experiences, it's almost like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. And what concerns me is that too many people have become conditioned to accept that it has to be this way. And so I hear the fire from you, but I hear the fire from, you know, other people as well in our community. But I don't know that the young people, the younger generation, that they're retaining the information, because I think it's also ingrained into their parents. I think the work that we're called to do is to create new narratives, right, and new paradigms, and to make that intergenerational. And so what I hear you saying is this intergenerational kind of work that needs to not only land on the doorsteps of institutions, but also households in our community. And so can you talk about some of your experience in kind of the community work? How do we galvanize community around these new narratives when it comes to education? Because what I tell my students when they make an educational decision, they're actually making a business. And I kind of frame it in the lens of it being transactional, that if I'm going to spend this, whatever, if I'm going to spend this number, then I need to know the value of what my degree is or the area I study. And so I tell my students, I'm not sending you to college so that you can go have this exploratory kind of magical experience. No, we're going to do that here now while it's free. When you go, you're going to go with a plan and a purpose so that you can then build. And I know that that's a rarity in education, because I think a lot of people just pump this notion that go to school, and then you'll figure it out. And that's been a detriment to my community. So in terms of community outreach and preparing and kind of, I guess I want to say, equipping our parents, our community leaders with new narratives. What has that been like to be in the fields and spreading that disinformation about the student loan crisis?
It's what you said. It's intergenerational. So I'll talk about that. But it's also sure. Seasonal.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
So what I mean by that is the current borrowers who this recent announcement impacts are anybody who got their loans dispersed after June 30th of this year. Mm. So anybody after that does not qualify for any of this program stuff that Joe Biden's talking about, which I hope we get a chance to dissect.
That's coming next. So we got to get there.
Okay. I got to hurry up with this so we can talk about that.
Yeah. Please bring us there.
So there's that. And so there are people who are currently seniors in high school who need to make the choice that, am I going to go to college or am I not going to college? And how much will it cost? And how much will my family have to take out? And will I have student loans? And does this cancellation stuff impact me? Then there are current students on campus who are not paying back their loans right now, don't need to for the next 2, 3, 4 years until they graduate. And then there are people who are like me, who have been graduated, who are borrowers, who have taken out loans, who get the cut. So there's generations, right?
Yeah, sure.
But then it's seasonal. It's seasonal in the sense that we have an internal deadline. We're waiting for an application. If you were applying for the current forgiveness program, the public student loan forgiveness program, there were some amendments that were made that made it easier. And you have until October 31st, the next 27 days to apply for public student loan forgiveness. The application is still open, but they made some changes to the waiver that are real technical. So people can apply now. The announcement that Joe Biden announced, that application closes December 2023. So people have now until the next year. I mean, repayments start on the January 1st. So fill it out ASAP. I don't even know why they did that. We'll talk about that.
Get to it
and do it now. But there is still December 2023 for that. So there's the internal timeline season of when we have to apply for this current cancellation. But then there's the season of the movement of education, right? Education justice, as some people like to call it. And well, like I said, in 2007, when I first learned about student loan debt cancellation, or I started talking about free education, nobody in Congress talking about free cancellation. Nobody, not one. We didn't have a bill. We didn't have legislation. What we did have was, well, let's just increase the Pell Grant. let's try to do tuition freezes. And like, those were not happening across the country. And the Pell Grant wasn't increased. They're like, well, let's change the FAFSA so it's in multiple languages, which it's like in 3 languages now, right? It was to your point and to some of the our critics, which I am definitely a critic of all the things that have happened in Congress right now, around, well, these are just incremental changes, right? Like, oh, they changed the FAFSA so it's in more languages. Oh, they increased the Pell Grant. Those are small gains and small wins. But I'm looking back as an organizer over the last decade and saying the movement of student organizers then and now have been able to advance a national narrative over the last 2.5 years that says not only is student loan debt a problem, but we're going to push it to make it a national priority. Mm. I don't care which debate you look back at in 2018, all the candidates had to take a stand. That was one of the questions that the interviewees were saying, okay, Warren, where are you on debt cancel? Okay, Biden, okay, Bernie, okay, Cori Bush. Right. Okay, you know, yeah. Amy Klobuchar, okay, yeah. What y'all say about student loan debt cancellation? We did that. We did that.